You know, watching your kids grow up, you kind of realize how much of an influence you really have on them. You as a father, like, you are their, like, protection. Like, you're the one that they go to be safe. Am I going to follow? Am I just going to, you know, turn my head and do what I'm told? Or am I going to stand up and have confidence and integrity for what I know is right? I'm aware that I'm not perfect. I'm aware that I'm trying, and I'm constantly evaluating myself to become better.
All right, welcome to the Rad Dad Podcast. This is episode 37. I have Alex Wuttke here, and this is the first time we've ever met.
Yep.
So, I was telling you before, I'm pretty excited for this episode because we know nothing about each other.
Yeah.
Besides, like, I've seen some of your TikToks. You've probably seen some of mine.
Yep.
But the reason I hit you up is because I'm like, I was watching some of your videos. I'm like, this dude likes being a father.
Yeah.
Like, I could tell that immediately, you know? And I had the idea to, like, bring somebody on that I just don't know at all and just get to know each other and talk about fatherhood. So thanks for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just to start off, talk to me about your upbringing and maybe a few highlights from your childhood.
So I grew up in Idaho. My childhood was interesting, to say the least. I mean, I had the opportunity to kind of see a lot of differences, I guess, in, like, fatherhood. My mom's been married a couple times. My mom and dad got divorced when I was, like, 1 year old, and so 1 year old. So I didn't really have a big relationship with my biological father. But like I said, my mom was married a couple times, and so I've had a lot of stepdads in my life, which some of those were better than others. But, you know, I think talking about how, you know, you notice that I love being a father, I think that's one of the biggest things that's kind of driven me to have that love, is just because I think a lot of times we kind of emulate what we grow up with, for better or for worse. But with my situation growing up, I think that's something that I've kind of carried with me, of what are some of the things that I wanted that I maybe didn't have the opportunity to get. So I'm grateful for, you know, my childhood. I'm grateful for the opportunity that I had to grow and kind of help establish a foundation for my kids that I didn't necessarily get. But so yeah, that was kind of my childhood. I mean, I grew up with a single mom a lot of that time, and again, that has really given me a foundation of kind of how to treat my wife and how to be a good husband and father. I lived in Idaho and Utah kind of off and on until I was 18, and then went to school in Idaho, and we've been in Utah for about 3 years. So
okay. Do you remember a time growing up where you became excited about fatherhood?
To be honest, not really. I think it's always been something really scary to me, just because I can't really say I've seen a lot of good fathers in my life. And so, and I mean, even now I feel like I put in the effort to be the best dad that I think I can be, whatever that might mean, but it's still kind of a scary thing. I mean, and I think you know, watching your kids grow up, you kind of realize how much of an influence you really have on them, not necessarily in what you're doing day in and day out, but just the home that you have, the media that you have. Like, there's so many factors that go into a little kid's mind, because they're so aware, so observant, everything's new. So it's like, it's still kind of scary, but I love it. I mean, it's the best thing ever, but at the same time, it's still kind of a fear of, you know, I want to make sure I'm the best dad I can be.
Yeah, man, I feel that to the core.
Yeah.
I've said this before on the podcast, but I always feel like I'm playing catch up. Like, I get the hang of having, like, a 2-year-old, but then I blink my eyes and he's 3. Yeah. I'm like, crap, I don't know how to deal with a 3-year-old, and just, like, playing catch up. But do you have, like, an experience in being a father where you're like, okay, I got this and I actually enjoy this?
Yeah. I mean, my son, so my oldest son, he's like 22, 23 months. He'll be 2 in January. And then we have a 5-month-old little girl. And I think, I don't know, I guess I can't speak for having a daughter yet because she's still so little. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think just, like, watching my son grow up and develop and watching him kind of learn these new skills and, like, learn how to use a ball and, like, how to play on the playground and, like, like, this is kind of a silly example, but today I was sanding a cabinet that I bought, and, like, it's a really loud sander, and, like, it's a big thing. And so at first he was scared because it's, you know, loud and new.
Yeah.
And I brought him over and, like, sat him on my lap and kind of had him, like, help me. And I think it's just little moments like that where it's like you kind of realize, like, you as a father, like, you are their, like, protection. Like, you're the one that they go to be safe. When they're scared, they come to you. And I think that's kind of a humbling experience. And I mean, with kids, that happens pretty frequently, I guess, if you're doing at least a little bit of something right. I mean, they're going to come to you when they are scared or sad or anything. So I think when I have things like that happen, it kind of just sets me back a little bit of like, okay, like, I'm at least doing something right here. And it's like, that feels good. That feels good to have somebody that, you know, he can feel the love and feel the protection from his dad. So.
Yeah. And you've seen that he has felt that at such a young age.
Yeah. Yeah.
You notice that
for sure.
I feel the same way. I could never really grasp at what age they like look at you and love you, you know, and you don't really know until you're a father. Mm-hmm. Right. And you actually experience it.
Yeah.
So, but man, when they look at you, it's either like, crap, I better get my stuff together.
Yeah, I know. Toddlers, I think toddlers are like the most bipolar of them all, because one minute I'm his favorite and the next I didn't give him the right cracker and I'm the enemy. But
yeah,
that changes in 5 minutes. So,
What's a question you wish people would ask more when they're getting to know you?
And that's a deep one. I would say probably one of the biggest things that I think when it comes to conversation in general, I think we as human beings like to stay in kind of a superficial stage, which I'm not going to say I'm some like deep guru type of guy, but I'm not really like that in a lot of ways. Like I like to sit down and talk about things that matter. I like to talk about kind of deep things. And I honestly just think, like, you know, typically when you meet somebody, you ask the questions, you know, what do you do for work? Where are you from? How many kids do you have? But there's not a lot of questions of like, that really isn't who you are. I mean, that maybe is what you do day to day, but it's like, that's not really who you are. But I think just the question of like, what drives you? What gets you out of bed every morning? I think those type of questions dig a little bit deeper into the soul to like who you really are as a person. Because we all have to go to work, we all have to do something, and we all choose different career paths. But I don't think that career path usually has a lot to do with who you are. I mean, I wish everybody could finish every day and say, I don't even feel like I was at work today because it was just that great. Yeah. But that's just not the reality. And I think sitting down with people and actually talking about, you know, what the drive is, what's the motivation, what's the long-term goal, I think that's a little bit more of a thoughtful question that really kind of emulates who somebody is as a soul, as a person, you know, deep down inside.
Yeah. I feel like social media has made us the least social.
Absolutely.
People, you know what I mean? When I started this podcast, I came to a quick realization that I'm so sick of surface level stuff.
Yeah.
Just like you were talking about. And it was happening even with friends that I've known for over a decade. You know, we get together and hang out and it's just like, what are you up to? How's work? Mm-hmm. And I finally told my wife, I'm like, I'm done with it. Like, when we hang out, like, let's have some questions. Let's talk. Let's, you know, see what makes people tick.
Yeah.
You know, and it's provided so much value to my human interactions with other people, even with strangers.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the core reason of why I was excited about this podcast, is because it's you and I getting to know each other as fathers and as friends and you know, and hopefully starting this friendship. So I think it's pretty cool. talk to me about having two kids under 2 years old. What's that like?
Man, where do I begin? Well, first and foremost, it wasn't planned. kind of just happened. I mean, I guess, you know, A plus B equals C, and now we have two under two. But it's great, honestly. Like, it's definitely hard at times. Like, I think there's the stages that kids go through, and it's like, I have one that's very deep into the toddler stage.
Yeah.
They're both in diapers still. And then I have another one that's very reliant on mom and wants the attention from mom all the time. And so, like, in particular, the last couple of weeks, that's been hard just because, I don't know, they both just need attention. But but I think at the same time, it's so, I don't know how close your kids are, but we're kind of getting to the stage now where my daughter's interactive enough that like my son and daughter are starting to play a little bit, and she's very fascinated by him. And that's just such a cool thing to see, just because, I mean, from what I hear, that only gets better, you know, as they grow up, they're only going to be, they're 17 months apart. So really they'll be in the same stages of life for forever. And as a father, to be able to watch that and kind of see that there's kind of a built-in best friend, like,
yeah,
that's cool. And that's kind of starting to develop now that they're getting a little bit older. And, you know, that's awesome, just because I know, I don't know, I think having one kid for a while, it was kind of hard because my son Enzo, he just didn't really have anybody to play with. And I mean, that didn't last long just because they're so close. But at the same time, it's cool to see that friendship kind of developing slowly.
Yeah, I kind of know what you're going through. I have a 3-year-old boy and a 6-month-old daughter.
Okay.
So it's, you know, close enough, but 2 under 2, I think it's still a different ball game.
Yeah.
How do you support your wife? Because I know it's so hard for the wife to have alone time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a frequent conversation. I just really think I think one of the biggest things I've learned being married, but also becoming a father with my relationship with my wife, is our alone time and our personal time is very different. Mm-hmm. Like for me, my alone time is like, I just want to leave and go to the gym, put some headphones in and just do my thing for an hour.
Yeah.
For her, it's like, sometimes her alone time is like, she just wants to be with me and watch like reality TV. Mm-hmm. And like, that's just not my thing. And so it's like, we kind of just have to figure out like, what do you need? And like, how can I support that? Like,
do you feel like you two communicate that, or is
sure. And I think that was something that we kind of needed to figure out, because at first it was kind of like, I'm upset about this or I'm annoyed, and it's like, okay, what's going on? Like, let's sit down and talk about it. And so a lot of the time it's just kind of a matter of, I feel like that's a question that me and my wife ask each other pretty frequently, is just like, what do you need? Like, I can see that you're upset, or she can see that I'm upset about something. And instead of, you know, kind of feeding off of that, which sometimes it's easy to do that in marriage and get upset back, it's just, we'll just kind of stop and just, you know, give each other a hug and say, what do you need?
Yeah.
Because I think when you kind of have that approach, at least when she says that to me, it kind of makes me step back and say, okay, like, you're right. Like, I'm getting overwhelmed with this, or I'm stressed out about that. Like, what do I need? And it's, you know, I think that changes throughout the day. But a lot of time for me, it's like, I just need to go to the gym and, you know, blow some steam, or I just want to go, I don't know, do this or that. But I think we're very different in that way. But I think that one question of, just what do you need? I think that's really helped in our relationship.
Yeah. I have some friends that, you know, they've brought up the point, like, they're like, I just don't know what my wife wants. And I've asked, well, have you asked her? Mm-hmm. Asked her. And they're like, what do you mean? Like, have you vocalized and actually physically asked her what she needs? And they're like, no.
Yeah.
I think we get so caught up in our busy lives, you know? I mean, from what I understand, your 20s and 30s, it's just absolute chaos.
Yeah.
Until your kids are older, you know?
Yeah.
And as in a marriage, I just feel like we get so caught up. Sometimes we don't take a step back and say, hey, what do you need?
Mm-hmm.
Right. But, I think if you can learn that, you know, early on in the marriage, it helps a lot to just open your mouth and actually communicate.
Yeah, absolutely.
I recently had a family therapist on, and he said the best question you can ask your wife is, do you want comfort or a solution? Because they want one of them.
Yeah.
And if you give them the other one, it usually doesn't end up well, you know? Sometimes they just want comfort.
Yeah.
And most, I would say most of the time they want comfort. Rarely do they want your solution,
mm-hmm.
right? I don't know if you've ever made the mistake of telling your wife, well, you just need to have a better attitude,
yeah.
or, you know, yeah, something no. like that.
One time, never happened again.
Yeah, exactly. what's a lesson that you've learned in fatherhood that has surprised you?
Probably how much being a father like bleeds out into everything else in life. I think, you know, especially talking about communication, my son, who's almost 2, he knows very few words, and his communication, he knows a little bit of sign language and stuff, but it's hard for him to communicate. And I think as a toddler, that's probably one of the most frustrating things, is trying to tell your parents what you want or need. But I've realized, you know, I'm a nurse, I work in the ICU. And so a lot of times it's hard for people to communicate. You know, there's people that are in traumatic accidents and furthermore, they're in critical care. And so it's a tough time. And I think, as I've become a father and kind of seen different relationships and different roles that I have in my life, I realized that everybody's not really a whole lot different than a toddler. I think the communication is something that we all struggle with. And I think just like you said, it's like, you know, people talk about having a hard time communicating with their spouse, and it's just, did you just ask the question? And I think, becoming a dad has kind of helped me see that we're all kind of like little kids. You know, we all kind of get caught up in, you know, like you said, the social media side of things, or like kind of beating around the bush with a lot of stuff. But it's, I think it just really comes down to the communication. Like, and toddlers don't have any fear when it comes to the things they want. Like, they'll throw a tantrum on the floor if they're mad. If those emotions come up, they're coming out.
Yeah.
And I think, again, me and my wife, we try to kind of emulate our parenting tactics with each other, because I've realized that a lot of times when my emotions come up, I like to hide them and bury them and don't communicate them with my wife or whoever needs to be communicated with. But I think we can learn a lot from toddlers in that regard, because letting your emotions come out when they need to is the way it's supposed to be. And I think the longer that we hold those things in, the harder and harder it gets to really let go and kind of move on later on. So that's probably one of the biggest things, is I think we're all kind of toddlers at heart. We just don't really realize it. We try to be tough and try to hold things in. And obviously there's social standards that we have to follow, but
right.
I think expressing ourselves the way that toddlers do, I think would do us all well from time to time.
I've never looked at it that way. That's super interesting. It's so weird, because from an outside perspective, parenting is the parent guiding the child, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you can flip that and parents are like, "Hey, what have I learned from my kid?"
Yeah.
Rather than, "What have I taught my kid? What have I actually learned?" I feel like most parents could write a whole book.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Yeah.
So, talk to me about working in the medical field. From what I understand, you kind of started your career in 2020, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I graduated from nursing school in 2020, like right at the height of COVID. My last couple semesters of nursing school were completely online, which...
Did you know you were in for it at that point?
Yeah. And I mean, even with like nursing school, I mean, it's pretty hard to learn physical hand-on skills from a computer screen.
Yeah.
So I felt pretty ill prepared starting out my career in the first place, just because of that.
Were you married at that point?
I got married in September of 2020, and then I graduated in December. So okay. Just a few months before.
Okay.
And then crazy we moved year. To Utah. Yeah, for sure. Moved to Utah. I started in a COVID unit, and where every patient on the whole floor was a COVID patient. And then shortly after that, I moved into the ICU, which they were still COVID, just more severe and intubated. And that was pretty eye-opening. You know, I think there was a lot of politics involved at that time, and there was a lot of hearsay, like, mm-hmm. and I think being frontline in the middle of that kind of opened my eyes to a lot of the reality of what was really going on. And I don't want to get into the political side of it, but it was just interesting to, you know, kind of going back to the social media aspect. On social media, you could scroll through and see all of the horrible things going on and how the facts were right there in front of you on your screen. But for me, being there, working COVID, seeing how doctors treated patients, how patients treated patients, how patients viewed everything going on, like it was just, I don't know what word to use. Kind of a disaster, I guess, just because there was just a lot of lies, a lot of false reality mm-hmm. everywhere. And so, I mean, that was my first entire year of being a nurse. And so it's like, I went to school for 4 years. I got a bachelor's degree, you know, kind of looking forward to being done with school and stepping into the actual professional role. And it was like, that was just a kind of a shot in the face of like, is this really how it is? Like, this is not what I signed up for.
Was it like, did you feel like you had to keep your mouth shut because you're the new guy?
For a little bit. And then I think you see enough and you kind of realize what's really going on, and you're kind of like, nah, like I'm not just going to bow down. I'm not going to be a sheep, but
yeah,
I honestly feel like in a lot of ways that kind of grew my confidence as an individual, just because I think, especially in the world nowadays, we are more or less trained to follow the crowd. And I think, you know, I even think with like your podcast, I think that's one of the things that you're not doing. You're not following the crowd. You're really setting a standard with fatherhood, because I don't think a lot of people view that as the divine role that it really is. But it's like, I mean, I'll say for myself, I think that's my favorite and most humbling responsibility is being a dad.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, being a nurse and going to further schooling and all these things, like those are good things to me. I mean, I'm excited to pursue my career and get to that point, but it's like at the end of the day, the way my kids look at me, the way my kids view me, that's all that matters.
Yeah.
And so I think being able to be a part of that and kind of see those things, it really kind of gave me the question of like, am I going to follow? Am I just going to, you know, turn my head and do what I'm told, or am I going to stand up and have confidence and integrity for what I know is right? And I feel like that was kind of a turning point for me of like, no, I'm not going to bow down to this. Like, I'm going to stand up for what I believe to be right. And I think that bleeds out to, you know, multiple other things in my life. But yeah, that was kind of the first like moment of truth of like, there's a fork in the road here. Which way are we going to go? So
I feel like every man has to have that realization and make that decision.
Yeah. Right?
And I think the men that don't, that just decide to be acted upon and go with the flow, they're not building their legacy. They're not building a legacy that they're going to leave with their kids. And it's sad because I'm a hands-on person, man. I'm going to make sure my legacy is what I want it to be. Right.
Yeah.
So I love that you've made that decision, and also that you realize that you made that decision.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. I'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsors. I'm just kidding. I don't have any sponsors. I'm a one-man show, but I would appreciate you liking and subscribing and following my journey on social media. I'm working hard to put out relevant and useful content for y'all, and your support means the world to me and it keeps me going, so I really appreciate it. So I'm assuming you got thrown into the fire during COVID, right? And you're a newlywed. How did you find balance and the toll that your career took on you, and then coming home and giving time to your wife?
It was honestly pretty hard at first, just because I kind of got thrown bottom of the barrel, started out on night shift. And with that schedule, my wife was in school at the time, so she was going to school.
So
if I remember, it was like 8 to 5, Monday through Friday. Yeah. And then I have work from 6 to 6, 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. So I'd get home at 6:30, 7, and we'd usually go on a walk like right in the morning. And then she would go to work and I'd go to sleep. And then she would get home like basically as I was leaving. And I mean, typically you only work 3 shifts a week. And so we kind of found balance here and there when I wasn't working, but it was still tough. And I mean, I think the first couple years of marriage there's a lot of things to figure out in the first place.
Yeah.
But I definitely think that kind of threw a wrench into everything, just because we didn't really have a lot of quality time together. And, you know, I'm starting out this new career, and, you know, again, going back to just how life was during COVID, I think it made a lot of people just question so many things. And so with us starting our marriage out, and then, you know, we got married, I graduated, we move, my wife starts school, I start a new job. Like, there was just a lot of transition in there. And I think that was one of the bigger steps that we kind of had in our marriage, where the communication really had to figure itself out. And I mean, it's a marathon. It's definitely not a sprint. Like, we're still continually doing that. But I don't know, it kind of forced us to figure some things out right off the bat, just cause like I said, there was just so much change and so much transition personally and in our marriage. But looking back, I think it was a great thing. I think it was good for us and kind of gave us that opportunity to sit down and talk.
Have you had a moment yet in your marriage where you and your wife have talked and you've realized how proud you are of what you've built so far together?
Yeah. I honestly feel like we have that conversation pretty frequently.
Really?
Just because, you know, kind of going back to the conversation we had in the beginning about just childhood and kind of what you envision your further life to be as a father, as a husband, you know, as a wife, as a mother. Me and my wife talk about that a lot and just look at kind of the life that we've created. And, you know, it's not like we have a whole lot of the materialistic things. We don't have a brand new home. We don't have all these nice cars, things like that. But it's like, you know, I think when you can sit down and look at your kids and see the things that they're learning, you know, that's one of the biggest examples, in my opinion, of like, this is what it's all about. Like if I'm giving the time and attention to my kids and my wife, and if family is one of the top things on my priority list every day, to me, that's satisfying. And I mean, it's not like a pat on the back type of thing, but it's just like a, this matters now and it's going to matter in 20 years and it's going to matter in 40 years. And I'm just grateful that somehow I have the vision to understand like this is important, because I think a lot of people don't. And I think a lot of people hit their 40s and 50s and they've been going hard at their career and built a legacy in that regard, but they sit back and think like, I don't really know my kids that well. My kids don't really call me when things get tough. Like,
yeah.
And I think it's kind of a harsh reality that maybe they didn't give as much time and attention to that aspect of their life. I think we all come to that understanding at some point. And I think my childhood and the examples that I had, whether good or bad, have kind of helped me have that vision a little bit earlier, which I'm deeply grateful for. So, I think another thing to look back on my life and think like, I'm doing all right. You know, I'm just grateful that I am able to recognize that and recognize the characteristics in my wife. And she's such a good mother, such a good wife. And just, that's her top priority every day, is being a great mom and supporting the home and things like that. And, you know, I don't think it gets any better. You know, there's definitely things that we want and goals that we have in life, but it's like, when it comes down to it, like things are good. So,
yeah, I hope you can remember that in the dark times, because I have found it hard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just want my kids like 20, 30, 40 years from now to hear the stories and be like, man, mom and dad, they sacrificed.
Yeah.
They worked hard. Like, I want my kids to learn that from me. You know, I don't want them to have to get into their 20s and learn about hard work.
Yeah.
And it scares me, because the world we grow up in now, like, you can get away with never learning hard work.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
And it's such a valuable thing. And then sacrifice, like, dude, life's hard. If you don't know how to sacrifice and you get stuck in a rut, it could go very bad.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure my kids learn those principles from me.
Yeah. Right? And I think that's what's hard, is it's, you know, I think you can, you know, we can sit down and we can talk about that, but like, what's the answer? And it's, I think, I was reading a book this morning by, I think his name's Ben Bergeron, something like that. He's a CrossFit coach, but he had this graph in his book, and on one side of the graph, it was, I don't remember what it was. It was like excellent on one side, complacent. And then the other side was the far spectrum of excellent. I don't remember the word he used, but basically this is just like couch potato, lazy, like no motivation. The other side is excellent, which is like, you know, our Michael Jordan's, Kobe Bryant's, people like that. But most people's goal is just complacent. And I think for me, like, you know, in your 20s and 30s, you're kind of in that grind, you're in that building phase.
Yeah.
And it's like a lot of us, we get to complacent and we're just kind of like, I think we're good.
Settling.
Like, you know, we've got a little bit of money, we've got a few things, like family's good. But it's like, I think about that in the fatherhood role, and it's like, you know, I can pinpoint a few people that I know that it's like, you're a good dad, but what's the difference between a good dad and an excellent dad? And it's like, again, going back to my career, I think about, what are the things that I need to do to have an excellent career? What do I need to do to get financially stable, to have my financial goals, to, you know, work the days that I want to work, that type of thing. But I don't think a lot of times we sit down and look in the mirror and say, how do I be the absolute best dad that I can possibly be? How do I be all the way on that side of the spectrum when it comes to fatherhood? And I don't know the answer to that question. I just thought about that this morning, and it was like, I don't know. I mean, what is an excellent father compared to a good, complacent, you know, healthy father?
Yeah.
But I don't know.
I mean, I hope that one day I can tell you, yeah, and you can tell me, because I don't know that it can happen in, you know, when you just have a toddler.
Yeah.
Cause we're not prepared for teenagers.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, we've talked a lot about these principles on the podcast, and my first few episodes of this podcast, this is episode 37, my first like 10, I was just like on cloud nine. I'm like, man, this is awesome content. I was so pumped, yeah, you know, really cool guests. And it dawned on me, I'm like, none of this means anything unless I do something about it, unless I actually take action on what I'm learning.
Yeah.
Right. And the whole premises of this podcast is it's called the Rad Dad Podcast, but I am not the Rad Dad. This is my journey to become a Rad Dad.
Yeah.
Right. And if I'm not actually taking action, I cannot claim that title.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah. So I've really, you know, last 15 episodes or whatever, I've really been focusing on trying to put into practice what I'm actually learning, because I find it so valuable to learn from other dads. The point I want to bring up is you talked about the grind in your 20s and 30s, you know, and I think this pattern that we've seen in the past is that these men work so hard and sacrifice so much in their 20s, 30s, and even 40s.
Mm-hmm.
They don't open up to other people. They don't talk about their hurts and their pains and their self-doubts.
Yeah.
And then when they're in their 40s or 50s, it comes out with major depression, anxiety, suicide.
Yeah.
So I hope that this podcast can be a beacon of light and just encourage our age group to just open your mouth, just talk, mm-hmm. you know, find a support group, find a best friend. Don't hold it in, because it is hard. When all is said and done, we can amp each other up, you know, on the podcast, but when all is said and done, like fatherhood, it's hard.
Yeah, absolutely.
What self-doubts have you fought with, in your time as a father?
I think a lot of it is just balance. You know, I think kind of that lingering fear of failure as a fatherhood. You know, I think the little boy in me looks back on the wishes that I had, you know, having, like I said, having multiple father figures kind of step in and out of my life.
Yeah.
But by the end of it, they were all failures. I mean, yeah. You know, I think there was positive influences, maybe slightly, but at the same time, nothing really ended on a good note. And so I think that's probably the number one thing for me is just having a fear that I'm not going to be good enough as a father, and I'm not going to be the dad that I wish I would have had when I was growing up. But I also think finding a balance between all of the things that are going on in life, like you said, 20, 30, 40, you know, you're balancing a lot of just life. You're trying to create stability for your family. You're trying to accelerate your career. You know, you're also trying to balance relationships with wife and kids and this and that. And it's, you know, like you said, it's hard. And it's difficult to sometimes, I think, keep your kids at the top of that, because
yeah.
they're just kids, you know, yeah. like what do they really need? They've got food on the table. They've got a bed to sleep in, you know, but I think as I've become a father, I've realized more and more how critical every stage of development really is. And, you know, something that I've learned in nursing school is just about how those early stages create a lot of their emotional resilience later in life,
yes.
which I don't like to think too deeply about that, because then it just makes you confused and kind of, I don't know, makes you think maybe you're doing something wrong. But regardless, it's just like, this time is critical no matter what. Like, it doesn't matter if your kid's 5 months or 2 years or 10 years or 25, like that time and attention should be there all the time. And I think that's hard, you know, again, because I'm trying to build a career so that I can have financial stability for my family. And I'm trying to do all these other things for my family. But I think in the midst of all of that chaos going on, I think it's equally, if not more important, to take the 15 or 30 minutes to get on the floor and play trucks or,
yeah.
you know, whatever it might be, which when you're in the midst of it and you're in the darkness and all that, it's hard to remember that, but that's their childhood. You know, this is our life yeah. now, but it's like, that's their childhood and you're their dad. And that's what they remember. They don't remember the long nights. They don't remember the sacrifices in that regard. You know, maybe eventually they will, but it's like what they remember is you giving them eye to eye attention and showing them that love.
I love that. So what do you do to find balance in your life and to take care of you?
I'm a pretty big like task person. I'm pretty big on tasks and scheduling, and I feel like it's the only way that kind of keeps my brain functioning. Just cause I feel like I can try to do way too many things at once and end up getting nothing done. And so, I mean, it might seem kind of crazy, but there's times when I have a really busy day that I'll literally put in my calendar from this time to this time, like my phone's in the other room and I'm just playing with Enzo. That's all I'm going to do. Because like I said, if I wake up and there's 15 things on the to-do list, one of those things is probably not play with my son. And I 100% think it should be. And so a lot of times I just have to be like very, very detailed in my scheduling, even down to the 15 or 30 minute mark. Just because I feel like it really helps me kind of stay on track. If I go over a little bit on one thing, I'm already aware of like, okay, well, next up is this. So let's just get right to it. And so I think trying to create a priority to play with my kids or spend time with my wife, for me, making a schedule like that really helps me kind of keep my mind on track and just kind of stay focused on what's next. Because a lot of times I think if I have all these things to do in the morning and then I get caught up and busy and don't do any of them, it's kind of like afternoon hits and I'm like, the day's already lost. Like, might as well just give up now. I'll do it all tomorrow. And then I just kind of throw the whole day away. But for me, I think just keeping tasks and keeping schedules, I think that really helps me kind of stay with the balance and kind of time management side of it.
Yeah. You need to make it sounds like you need to make a morning routine video.
Yeah, I know, right? Get ready with me.
Yeah. I've always thought it'd be funny to make one because I feel like no matter what I plan for a morning routine, my kids like screw it up.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I know.
So it'd be funny to make a little video like that. Have you seen that quote that says it's like, yeah, you would die for your kids, but would you get healthy for your kids?
Yeah.
I know you're a gym goer.
Yeah.
Is there a correlation between your personal health and just being a good dad?
Yeah, I think it's actually something that me and my wife talk about pretty frequently, but I think personal time is essential to be a good parent. And I think that's something that kind of when you first become a parent is kind of flip-flopped because baby's born completely dependent on you. And I think a lot of times we take our personal health and our personal life and just throw it on the back burner.
Yeah.
Because now we're mom or now we're dad.
Something has to give.
And yeah. It's and that. It's like, oh, well, of course I'm going to sacrifice everything for my kid. Like I would be a bad parent if I didn't. And I think that's kind of how me and my wife were for the first little while, but especially more recently, as we've kind of really dug into our own personal life and our just everything going on for us, mental health wise, I think we've realized like, for me to be the best parent I can be, personal time is essential. Gym time is essential. Healthy eating is essential. And it's like, if I really want to be that excellent parent, like those are non-negotiables. Because if I'm not my best self, how can I expect myself to be a good parent to others? And so that's been something that we've really tried to start incorporating even more, I'd say over the last like 6 months or so. And I feel like it's made a world of difference. And I think kind of going back to the conversation we had earlier about like, what do you need between me and my wife? I think using that time during the day to really prioritize, like, this is all about me. Like this, the other 24 hours of the day, 23 hours of the day, it's about work and my kids and this and that. But like 1 hour of the day, it's all about me. Whatever I need to do, my wife knows, like, she's going to watch the kids for that time, or I'm going to watch the kids while she just goes and does her thing. Just because I think we all need that mental break. But I also think we need that sense of satisfaction.
Yeah.
Because I think the reality is, as a parent, there's satisfaction in having kids, but there's not a lot of gratitude. And I think sometimes it's hard coming from toddlers that don't ever tell you thank you and don't ever seem appreciative of anything you're doing, because usually you're doing it wrong. You're not giving them exactly what they want. That it's sometimes hard to find accomplishment in that. And I think we all need some type of personal, whatever it is, some type of personal growth, whether that's growing your own business or, you know, doing something on the side with this and that. I think we all need something that's kind of driving us.
I love that. I refuse to be lazy through my kid's childhood.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I didn't realize from 2 to 3 years old with my boy, I didn't realize how physical being a father can be.
Mm-hmm.
In a good way, right? Because he's getting to the age where he's quite a bit more mobile. Like, we've gone on some small hikes. We go fishing. There's a lot more stuff. Dude, if I'm going to be tired through that whole fun stage, I will regret that the rest of my life.
For sure.
You know, so like you said, like we, as fathers, I think we do have to plan it out and make it a priority. It just seems like in our lives, something always gets put on the back burner.
Yeah, absolutely.
What gets put on the back burner for you?
I don't know. That's a good question. I think
I'll tell you mine. How about that?
Yeah.
Cause I don't think I've ever talked about it on the podcast. I feel like when there's so many things pulling me in so many directions, my spirituality always gets put on the back burner.
Yeah.
Because it's something that it's like, it's so easy to put off because in your day to day life, it's not super necessary for survival. Right. But if you're thinking in decades, you better take care of it.
Yeah.
Know? So I don't know. Do you have an answer?
I think honestly, I feel like I kind of reflect that same thing. Cause I was just kind of thinking like mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual. And it's like, I've been doing, I mean, you've probably heard of 75 hard. Mm-hmm. I've been doing 75 hard. I'm on day 55 or something.
Oh, nice.
And so I think my mental, physical, and a little bit of emotional, I've almost been so busy like with those tasks for 75 hard that I haven't really given myself a lot of buffer time.
Does it talk about spirituality in 75 hard?
No. And it doesn't talk a lot about emotions either. It's more just the physical, you know, what you're eating, drinking, exercising. And then there's also like reading and kind of that mental side of it. And so I feel like with that, I've been pretty on top of it. But I feel like the emotional and spiritual, I'd say that's probably the biggest two for me that definitely kind of get pushed behind. And, you know, as you were talking about the spiritual side of it, it's, I would say that resonates with me a lot as well, just because I don't need to have that be a part of my everyday. Really, I do, but it's like, if I don't have any spiritual anything during one day, it's like, I'm not going to go to bed that night and think like, oh wow, I really missed out today. Like, but if I don't go to the gym, I probably will feel that way. If I eat like crap and don't drink any water all day, I'm going to go to bed that night and be like, I have a headache. Like, I don't feel good.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting to think about that. But like you said, over the decades of time, it will definitely add up. But I would say that's probably the number one thing that gets put on the back burner is the spirituality, which I've never had that question asked to me. And so I don't think I've ever really thought about it, but it's like, it's something that I definitely need to be a little bit more aware of, because it is important to me and it is something I want long term, but frankly I'm not putting the work in to make it happen.
I think when we as men talk about balance, correct me if I'm wrong, but usually it's in days, weeks, years.
Mm-hmm.
It's never in decades, in my mind at least. And balance is a tricky thing in parenthood because you're being pulled in so many directions, and I haven't experienced balance like on a monthly basis. You know, there's months where I'm super physical and hitting gym goals, and there's months where I'm reading a lot and I'm learning a lot and developing that. But I'm not balanced in years, but I hope to be balanced in decades.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I don't know if I explained that super well, but if you're trying to pack in your spiritual, mental, emotional, and spirit or physical all into one day, it's probably not going to happen.
Right? Yeah.
But if you're trying to pack it into months or years, I think it is doable.
Yeah. No, right? I agree.
Would your 14-year-old self be proud of where you're at right now?
Yeah, I would say so. And I think the biggest reason behind that is just because I recognize, kind of like what I said before, I feel like I recognize where I am. And I guess in some ways I do have a long-term vision.
Yeah.
I think as you grow up, and like you said, even right now, sometimes our vision is weeks and months down the road. But I feel like I've been able to develop a little bit of a better understanding of the long-term. And I mean, it's something that comes and goes. Like, you know, I get caught up in the day-to-day and my goal is become daily and weekly, and I'm not thinking about 5 and 10 years down the road. But I think looking back on me as a teenager, I think I was pretty unsure of myself, of my life, of just everything. And I think if I could go back to that point and see myself right now, I think I would be very proud of the person that I am, just because I've stayed aware of the long-term goals. There's a lot of opportunity in life to make the wrong decision that'll take you really far down the wrong road. And I've definitely had a few of those, but I think looking at where I am now, and especially in regards to my family, you know, that's always been the number one goal for me. Is I want a good wife, I want to be a good dad, and I want to treat my wife the way I wish my mom would have been treated as a kid growing up. And, you know, I'm not perfect at that by any means, but I'm aware. I'm aware that I'm not perfect. I'm aware that I'm trying, and I'm constantly evaluating myself to become better. And I don't, in my opinion, I think that's all you can ask for.
Yeah. Well, I hope you do feel pride for your, for who you are, because I'm proud of you as a father, and I think the world needs more driven fathers.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we need to be proud of who we are, but also have dissatisfaction with where we are, because we always want to be better.
Absolutely.
And do better, right? To close the podcast, I ask all my guests the same question. That is, if there's one lesson you want to leave with your kids when you're no longer here, what is that lesson?
I think the number one thing that I want my kids to learn is that there is absolutely nothing in the world that you can't be. If there's a goal, whether it's to be a doctor and go to school for 15 years, whether it's to be a blank amount of millionaire, billionaire, whatever it is, or if it's just to be, you know, what a lot of people would consider just an average Joe, I think we grow up a lot of times with so much self-doubt, and especially with social media, we see all of the things that seem so unachievable. But when we look at where we are now and when we look at where we want to be in 15 years, it is hard to envision that happening. But if there's one thing that I want my kids to know, it's that you can literally do anything you want in life, no matter what it is. There is nothing stopping you from being great at whatever. And I think that's something that I've had to really learn for myself over time, because it's something that I did not believe for a really long time. But it just takes that 1% effort every single day. It's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen in a week or two, but being conscious of the long-term goal and incorporating it into your daily and weekly goals, it makes anything achievable. And I think if my kids could learn that at a young age and put in the work to make it happen, I just think anything is possible.
Awesome. I'm grateful for you coming on the podcast and sharing your thoughts and insights, and thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Cool.